Welcome to the GGB Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we feature an interview with Bill Hornbuckle, the president of MGM Resorts, on the new developments on the company's drawing board, starting with the new T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas opening this week. The GGB Podcast is sponsored by iGamingPlayer.com, the nation's leading affiliate marketing partner for online and land-based gaming. It was just a few years ago when MGM Resorts was clinging to solvency. Massive debt had threatened the viability of one of gaming's largest companies, but wise financial moves made the debt manageable, and new projects began popping up left and right. MGM President Bill Hornbuckle has been a busy man, mostly responsible for the company's expansion plans. He is in Las Vegas this week for the opening of the park and the T-Mobile Arena, while he works on other projects like MGM National Harbor in suburban Washington, D.C., and MGM Springfield in Massachusetts, not to mention the massive project in the Cotai region of Macau. Hornbuckle also talks about the new plans to attract young customers and what's next for one of gaming's most respected companies. He spoke with me at his offices in Las Vegas at Bellagio for the feature story in the April issue of the magazine. Bill Hornbuckle, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. It's great to see you again. It's been a while since we caught up, and I'm glad we had the time to get together here.
Well, my pleasure. Appreciate you coming on.
So we're entering a very exciting period for MGM. I was adding up the things that you guys have on your plate that are going to open within the next couple of years, and it's just pretty impressive. And each one is very, very different from the other. So, you have to bring a lot of different skill sets here. So let's start with the one that's opening the soonest, which will be the T-Mobile Arena here in Las Vegas. Very impressive. I've been in there for a couple of press conferences so far. Even though it's a huge arena, it looks like every seat's a good seat. So I'm anxious to see an actual event in there. Now, you partnered with AEG. How did that partnership come about, and what has it meant for the arena itself?
Many years.
Right.
Obviously, AEG has been in the market for decades in some way, shape, or form. I started talking to them specifically, Dan's predecessor, maybe 5-6 years ago now, about... the Grand Garden Arena has been a great vehicle, but
right.
It was clearly there was a lot of dialogue in the community about yet another arena, and we just didn't want to cede our position, period, and a circumstance. What was interesting about the dialogue then is AEG wanted to manage the content, which caused us a couple of issues. Obviously, content is king to what we do and the type of, and while Justin Bieber's great act may sell out, I can't have too much of Justin Bieber.
Right.
I need Billy Joel and other things that apply to the
Garth Brooks.
Garth Brooks and apply to the right demographic. And so we lost touch over about a year conversation. Mm-hmm. They obviously had reemerged at the time with Caesars. We all know that story.
Right.
And we took the opportunity a couple years ago to reengage and say, look, let's be serious about this. We want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You should want to do this. They're an asset-based company.
Sure.
While they have an AEG Live, it's not their core business.
Mm-hmm.
It's about owning these huge, great assets. And so
We
got together and we did it.
Mm-hmm.
They've been great partners to work with so far. Live Nation still is two-thirds of our content, two-thirds
mm-hmm.
of the Valley's content. But AEG, particularly in terms of guidance of the arena, you mentioned the scale. It has as many seats, save the suites,
mm-hmm.
as Staples. Yet it's 650,000 square feet, where Staples is 950,000
mm-hmm.
square feet.
Right.
So it's very efficient. We bring people even that much closer down into the
mm-hmm.
the bowl, into the act. We have 42 suites. We have these amazing bunker suites. We have everything you'd also expect in a suite. Several different club areas highlighted by at the very top. We have our friends at Hyde
mm-hmm.
with SBE are going to do a club. Very similar to what they have done at Staples,
mm-hmm.
And the views from up there are just spectacular.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It's fun. It'll be if nothing else, it'll be fun. We're going to kick this thing off the week of April 4th with the park opening.
Mm-hmm.
Arena goes to the Killers. We thought we'd do a nod to locals.
Right, that was very
kind of test it out, if you will. And then we start with Guns N' Roses, and then
mm-hmm.
you've seen a lot of the lineup.
Yeah.
The fun thing for us, and what is good news, is that opening weekend, April 7th, 8th, we have Guns N' Roses in the main
mm-hmm.
arena, the T-Mobile Arena. We have a Pacquiao fight in MGM. And we have Ellie Goulding in Mandalay Bay. Mm-hmm. I think all three will go clean. I know Guns N' Roses will go clean.
Sure.
I presume Pacquiao will go clean. And I think all three will probably sell 55,000 entertainments that weekend. Right. And so good for the city, good for us, of course.
Sure.
And so, look, they've been great partners. It looks spectacular. We're, we're very excited to get it launched.
Yeah, the outside is just knocks you out.
Yeah, it's great. When we, which you haven't seen yet, is at night. It's this curtain wall for video.
Right.
It's going to really liven the thing.
Yeah,
up.
No question about that. Now, the National Hockey League is considering putting a franchise here in Vegas, which will be located at the arena. Is that a critical part of the success of the arena?
It helps.
Yeah.
You know, interestingly, we have sold, we've exceeded our sponsorship expectation, led by T-Mobile and others. We have sold all but two suites, so, you know, the suite inventory is all but gone. We have club seats available and some other things, but we started at the top and are working our way through. And that's really all before NHLA was being talked about, and really more importantly, for sure. We're all optimistic. You know what the community did with 13,000 preseason full season tickets sold for locals, not for corporations.
Sure.
And so we're excited. They've delayed it now twice, making us a little antsy. They're going to come out in, we think, in March and or April. They've promised us another dialogue around the thing. Us meaning Bill Foley, and the principal. We're obviously just the venue. Look, it's 40. Well, depending on what they do in the playoffs, if they get it at some point, it's 40 to 44 events, which is nice.
Yeah.
Probably Thursday, Sunday events. You know, as they go down into the LA corridor for either the Ducks or the Kings, we'd have a game here, the same team. And you can imagine when the Blackhawks are in town, what we can and should and will be able to do.
Right.
But the success, the foundational sponsorship success of all of that was done pre-hockey.
Okay. So you mentioned some of the suites are being sold. Have some of the other casinos on the Strip bought those
suites?
Yeah,
we have. Caesars continues to look. They have some issues at this point. Steve Wynn is all in, which is great. Boyd is in. And so Stations is still contemplating, probably on behalf of UFC.
Sure.
In fact, the Wynn organization got behind us for an event we'd like to do with a megastar.
Okay.
And we needed some funding to go above and beyond the normal, and they've agreed to participate in that.
Okay.
So you've been over there. You understand that the representation is to make it truly a Las Vegas-based arena and not an MGM.
Right.
So there's no signage.
Right.
There's no M Life. There's no some of the obvious things you might suspect you'd see if you walk into an arena half owned by MGM. We're not doing that.
Right.
It's going to feel like a home base for anyone who's in there. There's two main VIP entrances. One we will have and share for the north side. Excuse me, the west side of the arena. Wynn and others will share the east side. Exact same experience. Exact same exposure. Exact same seats, for that matter.
Okay, great. Now, you mentioned the other two arenas that you're, the company owns. What impact is it going to have on them?
So, to make this arena, the T-Mobile one, succeed, we need about 100 events. To completely succeed as a company, we need about 200 to 240 events, give or take. The good news is MGM, because of its scale and the way it's integrated, because although this is a spectacular arena, it's still not integrated. There's a lot of right-sized events, a lot of made-for-television events that want to stay at MGM, and we're happy about that. I think the one that we'll see less A-level events, candidly, is Mandalay.
Sure.
But the whole economic design of that place and the reason it still stays in existence isn't to be an arena.
Right.
It's to be a housing activity and a place for Bill Gates was in there last year speaking to his Microsoft folks. CEO of IBM's coming in a couple weeks to speak to 11,000 of his people.
Okay.
And so we use it really extensively for conventions.
Right, right.
And from time to time, obviously, it does.
Right. And, of course, what we haven't mentioned here is that the expansion of the Mandalay Convention Center just finalized itself, just opened up. How's that been going?
Again, you know, from our perspective, it seemed like an easy bet because we did see, obviously, we enjoyed 06, 07, massive convention business. Matter of fact, I was running the property then. We saw the trough in 9 and 10, which was horrific.
Right.
But over the last several years, we've seen this regrowth. And we're almost back to our 07 levels in terms of attendance. But we particularly saw, because some things were going on in the country, Moscone up in San Francisco was closing for retrofit and some other things. We picked up some fairly significant pieces of business. And so what we're now able to do isn't necessarily the scale of it, because it's now, again, the fifth largest convention center in North America, but we can run simultaneously two events. And so we've moved 400,000 additional square feet of concrete, and we've added 100,000 square feet where the old concrete was of carpet space, mm-hmm. so we have the right ratios, and we could house and function two significant conventions at the same time, and I mean significant conventions.
Right, right.
Bigger than most cities.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing when, what was that, 500,000 square feet, the expansion?
The totality. It was 400,000 totality, right. But yeah. We, again, so 400,000 concrete,
right.
And we converted 100,000 concrete okay. into carpets, so a bigger ballroom, et cetera.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that that's an afterthought in your company.
Well, yeah, it is, but for the property, it's
right, sure, exactly. It's major.
Pretty meaningful. Yeah, yeah. And look, we did it, there's nothing on the cheap in Las Vegas anymore, but I think our all-in investment there was about $75, $77 million. For what we got, for what it will mean ultimately to the property, big deal.
Mm-hmm, great. Now, give me some of the elements of the park that's going to connect the arena to Las Vegas Boulevard.
Sure. This started as Jim's vision.
Mm-hmm.
The park is Jim's vision. The notion that we would begin to open up facilities for basically the new consumer,
mm-hmm.
where going in a box and making them tread through the box to get
right.
to the elevator.
Sure.
Is that day has come and gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so how are we going to reconvert and reconfigure some of our properties? And the obvious one that wanted to need to be opened up for us was New York, New York. Even by its design,
sure.
with all that traffic, we closed it off. And then Monte Carlo felt right.
Mm-hmm.
And with the arena then being placed there, we needed to create a spine anyways to get to
mm-hmm.
it. And from that, Jim has always had a view, and rightly so, because of the way Las Vegas was developed, particularly unincorporated Clark County, it's not a city in that context. There was no public psyche around we need parks, we need green space,
right.
we need proper transportation.
Right.
And so we took the opportunity to create a 3-acre park, 2.5-3 acres. Our expense, opening it up, it's the spine that leads you into the arena.
Mm-hmm.
It opens up five venues for us along New York, New York. There's a beer garden. You've already seen Shake Shack go in,
right.
second largest now in their company's
mm-hmm.
history, and they're doing exceptionally well with it. We have a California Pizza Kitchen going back there. We have a major venue going in with an artist who will be obvious to you down the road once we announce it, which would be a really exciting venue. We've got a Japanese restaurant going in there and a Waffle House that's called Bruxy's. And a Waffle House, i.e. they make sandwiches out of waffles.
Okay.
It's a unique concept in Southern California. It's
mm-hmm.
wildly successfully lined people up out the door. And so we're excited by it.
Yeah.
It's LEED qualified in almost every
mm-hmm.
respect.
Right.
It pays respect to desert landscape. The shade structures are a form of art. You're going to see something at the center of it pretty soon here that's pretty compelling, that's iconic, that will draw people in.
Okay.
It will be opened and brought forward by opening the first week of April. And so we're excited by it. And then it leads to the plaza, much like LA Live for... the arena.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a 2-acre pad out there that we plan. If you go look at it now, you'll see stages at both ends.
Right.
We plan on doing the obvious
sure.
events,
mm-hmm.
Either hanging off the front of the arena or on those two stages.
Okay. Now, given, and I'll be kind here, the relatively modest success of the link at Caesars, why are you confident that this will work when that really hasn't?
I don't want to speak to what they did or didn't do right. I can say this. The arena and now the theater at Monte Carlo,
mm-hmm.
the Park Theater, for lack of a better definition for today, we think it becomes the center of entertainment in entertainment capital of the world
mm-hmm.
at the end of the day. I mean, if you think about where it is,
right.
how it triangulates itself with MGM, now the theater, we were standing in we're meeting with AEG,
mm-hmm.
And I was standing, there's a little Starbucks there, I was standing there with a cup of coffee in my hand, and I'm looking at the time, the Nokia Theater. And I'm looking at Staples, and it just dawned on me, well, here's what we do.
Yeah.
And so we did that.
Mm-hmm.
You notice that theater, by
right.
its design, is inside out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you come in, well, you come in the main entrance from the casino.
Right.
The whole architecture and the feel makes it, normally it was a wall.
Right.
Now you're looking at a theater. And so we think the notion of activity around it and the special event activity around it is what will drive it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's limited. Look, there's actually limited retail cash registers along the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's really part and parcel to a bigger vision and a bigger idea of the whole neighborhood.
Right.
And so, well, we'll be curious how each one of those restaurants is doing.
Sure.
We'll be curious how the beer pub is doing. By the way, I'll bet on the beer pub.
Yeah, it's Vegas.
It's five venues.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many they have at the Link, but I know they got a whole lot more
right.
than that.
Yeah. No
five
question.
Venues surrounded by $500 million worth of theaters.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that talk about the Monte Carlo, the renovations going on there. That theater is 5,000 seats, right?
5,300.
Right. So that's a significant another venue that you get to use.
As we looked at our entertainment portfolio, we know we wanted to be we wanted to control the arena business, for lack of a better word. But we also recognize we had 19 theaters plus two arenas at the time. Mm-hmm. But what we didn't have was to compete with either the Axis Theater or or Caesars.
Right.
We didn't have something of scale that could accommodate, you know, I won't use the word sit-down because they all hate it, but, you know, sit-downs.
Yeah.
And go out and get premium entertainment that would be lasting, and we could run over 2 to 3 year contracts. And so that's where that venue emanated from. And then it spurned on yet really the next thing. Well, we've invested over $9 billion in City Center. We've already put $100 million in opening up the front of the two hotels.
Right.
We've got another $100 million in the park. We've got another $400 million in the arena. The Monte Carlo, on its very location, is like the epicenter of a whole bunch of stuff here.
Right.
It needs to be something different. Mm-hmm. And luckily, it's pretty vanilla.
Yeah.
It's not like we're tackling Excalibur.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Which would be a little more complicated. Or Luxor, which would be very complicated.
Right.
We've looked at both of those. And so you're going to see a lifestyle product emerge from there, something that hopefully competes a little bit more with Cosmo. We were talking about that earlier.
Sure.
Potentially even with Wynn and one, you know, some we're going to step it up.
Okay.
We're going to step up the lifestyle component, the entertainment component, the millennial component, and position it in such a way that, well, it's not all for millennials because they're still not ringing the cash register yet. It's for people like you and me who think we're cool. And want to be in a cool environment. Whether we are or not, it's a different discussion, but that's the notion of it.
Sure.
And given the theater as its nucleus, you know, that's 5,000 people a night.
Right.
We're pretty excited about what that'll engage in our guests.
All right, one more question about Vegas. Pay-to-park policy that was denounced recently ruffled some feathers of the locals anyway. Have you finalized how are you going to do that? Is each property going to be different? How's that going to work?
Yes, we're getting there.
Yeah.
And look, we have listened, because we always do. We knew this wouldn't be wildly accepted in that context of, gee, what a great idea by locals. But, you know, if you look at any tourist destination, and we looked at all of them, and we studied all of them, and how much they charge for parking, and how it all works, and frankly, the behavior of customers who visit us now, you know, the notion that revenue per occupied room is going to come from as much gaming as it used to, just isn't going to be the reality going forward. And so as we redesign our products for entertainment, for engaging food and beverage, for the totality of how we're going to ultimately make money and provide, you know, 50,000 jobs in this community, which is, you know, those same locals are employed at, it's essential that we continue to tap all of our assets. We're cheaply priced as compared to any other marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
Locals are going to get a pass for 6 months. Ultimately, you'll need to belong to MLife to get a continued free pass.
Right.
And you can get MLife not just by gaming. It can be by engagement with food and beverage, entertainment, any way you want.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something we're going to push ourselves into. The garages, we needed more.
Mm-hmm.
They needed to be, some of them are in a state of wanting to get refurbished. And so we're going to spend $90-odd million between a new garage behind Excalibur to help the arena and other locations down there. When we do festivals across the street, it gets, and something's going at Mandalay, it gets pretty hectic. And we're going to refurb all of the existing ones. And there'll be a little bit of price parity, differentiating between our core properties and our luxury. But then within those two groups, there'll be parity.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
We haven't finalized all of that.
Sure.
But I will tell you, we would be charging for the arena in New York, and Monte Carlo Garage. That's our start.
Okay. And that'll happen in April?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Looking to acquire valuable players for your online casino or even your land-based property? Check out iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing site for legal online gaming in the U.S. iGaming Player was one of the first and only online affiliate marketing sites licensed in New Jersey. iGaming Player delivers quality customers and profitable players with its mix of online gaming news, play for free games, and information on the best promotions offered by its partner online casinos, poker rooms, and land-based casinos. iGaming Player uses the vast knowledge about players and their behaviors to deliver players to your online casino and act as the bridge to your bricks and mortar property. So visit iGamingPlayer.com to see what you've been missing. move on to National Harbor.
Yep.
Great property. You know, I know it's a little over budget, but I think it's all going to come back. But so, give us a status update on that project.
Sure. And it's look, it's an amazing location.
Oh, absolutely.
It's something that was interesting. One of our development guys who now works for me didn't at the time called Jim Mirren up literally at like 2 in the morning.
Yes.
He said, I've just stumbled onto something here, in terms of legislative window and an opportunity and a property that I need you to divert from what you're doing today and get down here tomorrow. And he did. It was instant as soon as you see the property, given the infrastructure, the location,
right.
That it was the right thing to do. And, you know, we went hot and heavy, as you know, and
right. Really
hot.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of money investing and winning that that deal, but we did.
Yeah.
And so, look, it's a crowded marketplace. We'll be the sixth and last licensed open. It did about just under $1.5 billion in GGR this year within that market.
Right.
Growing. It grew 13%, which is better than almost every other. In fact, it is better than every regional market in the world.
Somebody told me that Maryland Live did $750 million last year. That's not a bad
bad
number
for a parking lot
right. Location. Yeah.
And God bless them. You know, I respect what they've accomplished. I don't necessarily like the product, and I guess that's the point. So if you think about our history, starting with, we didn't build Bellagio,
right. But
Steve was childed with overspending. In fact, it's one of the reasons we were able to buy the company in 2000, as you may recall.
Right.
In retrospect, no way.
Mm-hmm.
In retrospect, Biloxi was a different story.
Right.
In Biloxi, where he did, we dominate that market.
Mm-hmm.
Bellagio clearly forever will have a legacy position here at the top end in Las Vegas. In Detroit, where we double spend anybody else,
mm-hmm. We
dominate that market. And I think in Maryland, where we're going to have 35 to 40% market share because of the amenity itself,
mm-hmm. It
is not just a casino. It's a regional environment that has, it's got a theater of 3,500 seats.
Right.
So the acts that we put here in Monte Carlo, ultimately the Park Theater, will go there and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of synergy there. And there's nothing quite like that in that area.
Right.
So it's got a conservatory atrium, the scale of Mirages,
right. Which
is spectacular. It's got 12 restaurants. It's the real deal.
Yeah.
And the others, God bless them, are regional casinos.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we'll dominate how much. The return may take an extra year or two,
mm-hmm. But
so what?
Yeah.
For the next 30 years, nothing's going to touch it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're building it next to National Harbor, which already has the infrastructure, already has entertainment, dining, shopping. Are you
3,000 guest rooms of note.
Right, exactly. Are you integrating with that project as well?
We're part of the community association, they call it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a trolley environment that's being created,
okay.
Rubber Wheel, which will go from downtown over to the Gaylord and then to our place and over to there's a large, what's the retail mall there?
Right up the
street. Yeah, there's one here too. The big retailer. I can't think of there's a mall right there.
Sure.
There'll be a four-stop system,
and
I think we'll be the highlight of it. And again, we're only building 300 rooms to take care of just the obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But there's 3,000 rooms within half mile of this.
Yeah.
I mean, so we couldn't be happier about the way that we think that's going to turn out.
Mm-hmm.
And the property itself is looking, what we envisioned, what we're building, if I put two pictures side by side, we've done this,
mm-hmm. It's
spot on.
Yeah, no question. Now, as you mentioned, it's a great location, but having lived in D.C., I know traffic can be awful at that location. Do you have plans to be able to funnel people off the Beltway into your property?
We do. I mean, it is what it is to a
certain
degree. There's $500 million worth of infrastructure at that corridor right there. But we have been told that during a major event at National Harbor, it backs up. And so we are, what we do, we think, and I'll use an event at the MGM, by engaging and paying for local police, state highway, we create, special environment for traffic. And so to the extent we have those issues, we're going to engage and be prepared to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We've done some infrastructure rework and some rerouting on several intersections around there because of traffic, because, we've anticipated, we've done modeling of traffic. And so we think we can make it good. To your point, it is a D.C. corridor.
Right.
It's never going to be great.
Right.
But last thing I want is some guy sitting off the exit for 45 minutes and he can't get to the property. You can
see
it, but he can't get
there.
And that
happens all the time.
That can happen.
It doesn't matter on which part of the Beltway you're on.
That can happen.
It's pretty terrible. Okay, in Massachusetts, the Springfield project looked like it's finally finally rolling after a lot of delays. So where are we now with that project?
So I prided myself on not having much gray hair. That's gone to hell this year. Where we are is we are in our third earnest month of construction. Mm-hmm. We're still before city council.
Right.
You know, all politics are local, and particularly in Springfield. but they have their last shot at us next Wednesday. We're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. What was originally designed, the original thought around it had residential on site.
Right.
The more we got into it, the more we thought about it. Frankly, the more we priced it, we said that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Right.
We had a commitment to the community to bring of no professionals back to this corridor because it's been, as you know, probably blighted for longer than you and I have been alive. And so we've taken that residential off site. We've got three locations, mm-hmm. one for sure, two others we're pending on. We're going to spread it out a little bit, and we're going to move our hotel into the then front structure for Main Street, which we think helps the Main Street corridor. It helps the engagement and some other things. And so that budget's still at $950-odd million.
Right. Yeah.
Springfield hasn't seen anything like that ever, actually, in real dollar terms. And so we're pretty excited by it. It will take us until September of 18. Frankly, we got going again in earnest 6 months later than we originally anticipated, only because the viaduct, that 91 corridor, it's a viaduct, it's 70 years old, and it needs to be redone, and the steel under it is corroded. And so that's going to take them through, they say, late spring of 18.
Mm-hmm.
We're hedging a little, thinking it usually will take a little longer,
and
so we're going to open hopefully Labor Day of 18.
Okay. And but you know, there was criticism that you were downsizing, but you're really kind of right-sizing, isn't that the case?
If you get into it, what we did, and you know, arguably, and in retrospect, you know, they have a big shiny tower now. The tower's not there,
right?
So you know, it's hard to kind of avoid that discussion. It wasn't like you could get too cute with it. But when you get into it in earnest, the public square footage went down 9%.
Right,
under 10.
Sure.
The back of the house, we got very creative. We designed it, and then a lot now like Treasure Island, which we remember from the old days.
Right.
You come from Treasure Island from the top down, not from the bottom up. And it's more efficient, more effective. And so we took a couple hundred thousand square feet out of the back of the house, various things that were ridiculous to begin with. That we just, as we, you know, the problem there was the RFP process was so competitive that everything had been knitted.
Sure, right.
And we don't like it, let's move it. We don't like it, let's change it.
Right.
But the commitment, we're spending more money than we committed to, by far.
Right.
And I think at the end of the day, this too will pass, and I think it'll be a great project.
And it's more in fitting with the community anyway, the low-rise.
That was a whole sell to begin with.
Right.
And it was interesting, those who critiqued it in reverse suddenly are now like, well, but you took our beacon away.
Right.
Well, no, and we're working on something that will be iconic when you go down the road.
Sure. Right.
Because you do want people to recognize you there.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be next couple of months we'll unveil that.
Okay. In the meantime, the Connecticut tribes have proposed a third casino outside of Hartford. And, of course, they were taking credit for you supposedly downsizing the project because you were scared of them.
I wish. I wish.
So are you very concerned about that?
Look, are we concerned? Yes. Mm-hmm. Have we remained active in understanding it? Yes. And here's the reality. If they want to, two realities. They talk about losing 4,000 jobs. Hogwash. Of note, a third of our jobs are probably going to be Connecticut residents anyways. Because remember, we are literally on the border.
Right, exactly.
Okay?
Right.
Will we take some of their business? Maybe. But if you want to put a third casino in Connecticut, it isn't to go to Enfield or the airport or some small town location to block us, by the way. It's to go to the southwest quarter of the state where you've got the whole New York metropolitan area and a massive amount of people to pull from and put it there. Well, of course, that's not the intent. The other concern, and the real concern is the way they've done it, is they try to get, for lack of a better word, cute without legal terms. This is reservation shopping at its finest under the guise of the protection of the state. We believe it's unconstitutional because of the way the state constitution works, and we think we'll prove ourselves correct in that.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I think they will see that. I think they've seen that as well.
Yeah.
And we believe that from a federal and a bigger picture perspective, it could be like, you know, the nose under the tent on how to get around this for various states,
right.
Florida and other places, that would be concerning, not only to us, but interestingly to some of the tribes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Seminoles in Florida are watching this very closely.
Right.
Well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
How does this work? We thought we had something.
Right. Yeah.
And so we're going to challenge it all the way.
Mm-hmm.
And if a third opportunity emerges and it can be positioned where it makes sense, Southwest Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to, but if we had to, we would engage.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd participate because,
sure,
A, if it was built the right way, we'd make plenty of money.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that because that's where their customers are coming from.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, it's really about the policy of the state, though, is what we're more focused on.
Well, I think you were working with for Steve when he was looking at Bridgeport all those years ago,
I was
right?
There. Right? I showed up as the, quote, Connecticut boy.
Right.
It's interesting, the mayor of Bridgeport today,
mm-hmm.
if a third one emerges at some point,
right.
He's very interested.
Yeah.
It was like, this is like deja vu after
really?
30 years almost.
Exactly.
25 years.
Right. So, I know you've got a lot of customers on the East Coast, but you still don't have a massive database there like a casino would like to have when you opened up. How are you going to tackle that problem both in Massachusetts and in D.C.?
Look, it's been interesting because obviously with the Borgata ownership, it's Borgata owns the database. Boyd
right.
doesn't own it and MGM doesn't own it.
Right.
It's Borgata,
mm-hmm.
which is somewhat frustrating. All that aside, our database is so large now. We've got 60-odd million people in it. And really, when you get down to what we're talking about, there's probably 8 million that really matter.
Mm-hmm.
We put concentric circles around Springfield, around National Harbor, around any place up and down the East Coast corridor, because
mm-hmm.
obviously we've been
sure.
playing in Little Georgia
right.
and other places. We come up with 250,000 to 300,000 customers
mm-hmm.
of substance. And so it's a good place to start.
Right.
I mean, you know, strategically, one of the reasons we're interested in Mass, New Hampshire,
right.
we're looking at North Jersey because we have to, because mm-hmm. if something's going to happen,
right.
you know, Georgia, mm-hmm. is that we want to build something of substance along the East Coast corridor,
right.
That we could, in fact, do exactly that.
Yeah.
But we're not, you know, particularly in the case of National Harbor, the product is going to be so compelling that it's going to build, some, I mean, it's going to be its own engine in that
right,
context.
Right. Okay, great. All right, and finally, Macau, probably your biggest headache, I think, right now. The Cotai project seems to be going along pretty strongly. What's your timeline on that?
So we just announced actually last night,
mm-hmm.
We're going to take a decision. We have taken a decision to delay it till the end of the first quarter.
Okay.
No more money. The way it worked out, it's not about a budget issue. It's about timing. It's about trying to understand where the market's going to be then, give
mm-hmm.
us a little bit more time, because there's some things that we're having and hawing on. In terms of the actual facility itself. And so we've pushed it to the end of March, the first quarter. No one was surprised by it, most notably the marketplace. And, you know, the good news over the last couple of months is mass market has begun to stabilize.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, we've seen some modest growth, particularly through Chinese New Year.
Right.
It is now 80% of our bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
Where VIP is only 20%, and I think that trend will continue for the whole community.
Sure.
The good news is, if we're, and that's not how this worked, we all know. I mean, at one point, people were getting 50% returns on their investment.
Right.
But if we were even look at what we're proposing today, which is a $3 billion-plus spend, what we think it will return in today's market, or next year's market, better example, it's still going to have a return on it of, you know, 22-23%.
Right.
We do that all day, every day,
exactly,
all
right.
day long. And the penetration into Macau is still less than 1%.
Right, right.
So long term, once they figure out the bridge and that
mm-hmm.
foopah,
right.
and they figure out the light rail and that disaster,
mm-hmm.
and they get the high-speed train actually that last mile connected,
right.
and they will get all of that done, you know, we're really optimistic long term.
Right.
It's been a blip. There's no, it'd be
sure.
hard to deny.
Well, people forget, you know, that Macau was way up here, you know, and now it's down here, but, you know, it's still.
Well, keep it in perspective. So it was a $45 billion market we thought heading to 60.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Gun and go.
Sure.
It's a $45 billion market that turned into 25, and we're trying to stabilize.
Right.
There are no other $25 billion markets anywhere close
right.
in the world.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
so it's still relevant. It's
mm-hmm.
still very relevant.
Right.
It's still. The cost of doing business there collectively, other than the tax, is still meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
You can make it a nice margin. And so, you know, we're excited long term. I will tell you, the last couple of years have been painful.
Yeah.
You know, our stock's trading at 9 and change.
Right.
We IPO'd at 15. It got
mm-hmm.
all the way to 37. You know, the implication. The good news for us is obviously while we were on the short side of it ramping up,
right.
good news is we're on the short side of it coming out because we just don't have as much of our company's bottom line at stake.
Sure, sure.
But it will grow.
So Studio City opened without any VIP rooms. You're going to have some?
One of those discussions? Mm-hmm. I think we will have some, yeah. I mean, look, we're building a mansion, much like here. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a mansion casino.
Right.
The question becomes not even who's in it. Customers will be in it.
Sure.
It's who's managing it.
Right.
Is it VIP in the traditional format that right. junkets currently provide? Is it us? Like anything, it's probably a balance and a combination thereof. We have, despite the 70% collapse of the number of junket operators, the remaining 30, there's a couple in particular, are still strong and strong for us. And so, you know, we need to understand how many tables we're going to get like everybody else. We need to understand the timing of that. We actually think pushing into 17, the government will be favorable to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're hoping so. And so we'll see. And, you know, the rooms and the spaces have been designed. One of the things we went back about 9 months ago now and started designing spaces that could be either or.
Right.
You run it, we run it, but someone's going to run it.
Right.
You know, and we've cut them back.
Sure.
The top three floors of the South Tower were designed to all be high-end gaming with a restaurant. Right now they're going to be concrete. They could be suites. They could be that someday. There could be a restaurant. We're going to take a view. So we'll probably open with everything, less the mansion, less the showroom, less those three floors.
Okay.
Mansion will quickly follow. Showroom will follow a couple months later to kind of keep things, you know, rolling out.
Right.
And then we'll take a view over time of what we do with the upstairs.
Okay.
You know.
In terms of non-gaming attractions, you know, again, Studio City opened with many of them. Do you have plans for doing the same thing?
We have theater for the first time there of substance. 1,900 seats. We've got three shows planned. I'm not going to tell you all about them yet.
Yes, yeah, sure.
I'm not completely ready. We have of note a spectacle that I don't know if you've seen it. You've seen the architecture inside that spectacle. It's a retail and restaurant environment, but it has in it holy schmoly. It's almost a football field long. It's got in it 18 or 19 massive LED screens, intermittent between green wall, that are programmed with lights coming off of the structure itself, which was kind of something we took from the Smithsonian and expanded it, to rotate itself into an experience.
Right.
So when you're there, it changes moods. It does various things that we think, much like the conservatory here and other things that have been created, it's one of those, if you're in Macau, you got to go see this thing.
Right.
And so we see that as a must-see. Retail continues to struggle there for everybody.
Right.
We'll have our share of complement of retail. I think other than the obligatory jewelry and maybe a Louis Vuitton or not, you're going to see us provide China, stores instead of made in China, made for China.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the retailers, you and I won't know their names, but folks from China will.
Right.
And they'll perceive them as high-end luxury, high-end goods, whether they're luxury or otherwise, is to be determined. And we've got one other trick up our sleeve that I won't tell you about yet, but you'll see, that is, you know, meant to do exactly that.
Sure, right.
Now, you know, we are on 22 acres there, 21 acres there, and we are, you've probably seen the structure, we're wall to wall.
Yeah.
And it's not like
it
we
is,
have,
there's no grass.
There's no grass. There's very little grass. Well, there's no grass, there's trees.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're going to take full advantage of what we have.
So will there be a connection to Sands Cotai Central because you're smack up against them?
No.
No?
Not,
so you
not
have to leave the building and...
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And we're debating with them, talking about with City Dreams.
Okay.
Because you can come off at the north entrance and cut across. And so that's in planning.
Right.
Don't know if we're open with it, but it's in planning.
Right. And when the light rail is open, will your stop be the wind stop there? Or
yeah, it's same.
Same
so
way?
That corner, go left to us or right.
Right, right. Okay. Okay, let's talk about some of the marketing. You know, since your background is in marketing and you really launched this thing when you were head of the marketing here, there's some of the social media marketing. I know I spoke with the woman, the tall woman,
Lily.
Lily, right? and she was really smart. You know,
yes,
had a lot of good ideas. You know, this is becoming such an important part of marketing. Are you happy with the way MGM's taking this at this point?
I'm happy that we've now fully committed to it.
Right.
and starting with Lilly, somebody we brought in a couple of years ago now. You know, I was a CMO by fire. You know, it's not, you know, my background. And so, while I knew all the principles, I knew the structure, I knew what we wanted to accomplish, I've been in Las Vegas my whole career. And so we wanted to bring someone in from the outside, who had an outside perspective. Lilly provides a fresh perspective. We've now brought in, what's the lady from
Beverly Jackson.
Beverly Jackson from the Grammys, who put that on planet, like Earth, in the context of social media. And she's got a whole team around her now. And so when you start talking about launching the arena, the theater, the park, the new Monte Carlo, some stuff in Maryland, but mostly the stuff here, and looking to and addressing a whole younger demo, we're all over it. We're fully dedicated to it. What it will yield, we don't know yet.
Right.
I mean, you know, and it'll be a long-term yield. But we do know this. If you don't, if you're not in that space, you have no voice.
Of course,
and
right.
over time, that matters.
Right.
And so we're full, we're all in.
Right. Okay.
We're all in.
And this, of course, addresses the millennials. But you know, people getting sick of that term now. You know, because it's been talked about so much. Is this? Do you think that it's being overdone? Or
well, I think two things. I think yes, because you know, like anything, it's the hot new topic.
Sure.
Particularly from a marketeer's perspective. I think the we've all seen what's happened in Las Vegas, where the average age has come down 6 years, driven by the nightlife business of note. That's all been a good thing. We've all made, in a vacuum of less gaming revenue, a lot of money with that. You know, it's an $800, $900 million business in this community and survive, you know, doing fine. It will shift to someday, by the way. The big DJ things will become something else, and you've got to figure that out. And, you know, millennials, they're interesting. They'll go into a club and spend $5,000 on a booth, but then they'll go back to the room where there's six girls in a room. And so, you know, it's this whole community thing that we have to figure out. And so as we look at particularly redoing Monte Carlo, as we look at some opportunity in MGM redoing the old, what are the front rooms called?
At the top? Or?
No, in the front. The old Marina Tower. The, oh, gosh. We're thinking about it. There's 800 keys up there. It was originally the foundation of the original marina. We redid it about a decade ago. It's time to redo it, and the connectivity to that whole end of the building is Millennial Haven. We are playing with it in the dome at MGM, doing a significant commitment to a millennial casino. And to define that, it's a space that's interactive that you go into because of the draw of the space and the enticement through music, food, the communal environment, all of the things that would attract somebody. It's destined and designated for them because they're big on give me my space. And oh, by the way, it has gaming in it. And oh, by the way, it's the kind of gaming we think they'll interface with, whether it's our new competitor, you know, our new tables, and other things that we all have in the pipeline. You know, so it's a space that's theirs, that's about an environment that has gaming in it versus go sit down at a blackjack table. And so we're going to dedicate 10,000 square feet to that, maybe 12, whatever it is, to try to bring that along. But yeah, I hear you. I mean, if you looked at our bottom line and what mattered, there's volume and there's retail volume. It's time to mature at the next level.
Well, there's still people my age still mature. Coming out of the gamble.
Baby boomers are still gambling. Our still biggest per cap customers, baby boomer. And it falls its way down, and there's more millennials than ever before, and they're not going away, and we better learn how to make some money with them.
Well, you already got them in the house. In the,
We've got to take advantage of that. So the good news is entertainment and the draw of Las Vegas hasn't lost its sex appeal, thank God. So we get them here, but now we've got to figure out how to, and things like parking. I mean, that's, you know, it's just it's the basics, but that's what it means.
So we got this little spin-off REIT company that, that you guys are putting together. How is that going to affect the operations of the properties that are under the REIT?
So limited dialogue I can have on this.
Sure.
Because I'm also on the board of it, so I got to be careful. But as it benefits MGM, we're going to have complete operating control. It's an up REIT or a controlled REIT, as you've probably read. You know, we'll probably sell off, hopefully, if the markets prevail the way we hope, 30% of it, keep 70% of it. That's a triple net lease. All of the capital is required, unless the REIT wants to do it. The capital requirements are the properties, the OPCO, with these remaining MGM resorts. And there's no operating change. It's a small entity. It'll have about six or eight people in it. We brought in a gentleman named James Stewart from Greentree, and a CFO from Greentree. to manage it for us. So we're serious about it and growing it as a real independent company on behalf of its shareholders and our own here at OPCO. Time will tell. I mean, clearly the frustration we've had is the valuation of our assets and the Cosmo, back to your earlier comment, selling for 10 times, you know.
Sure.
It was like, wait a minute, we're not trading it, you know. And so if we can get a different set of eyes on our industry, REIT investors of note who look at things and value the raw asset differently because the risk is not the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're going to take half of the money in rent, but there's limited risk, you know, drives up the valuation of that, that holding. And so it's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to go to market with it. Obviously, the markets aren't behaving right now, so timing, we're not going to plow into this. We're ready to.
Right.
We've done all the filings. We've done everything we need to do. And now we're just going to wait for the market to be right.
You and Station, right?
Well, that's the bigger deal.
Okay, well, we talked about all these initiatives. You mentioned Georgia and possibly Florida. Is there anything that I've missed that we haven't talked about that's on your plate for the next year or so?
No, look, we continue to begrudgingly watch Japan because it's meaningful in that scale.
Sure.
We're not overly hopeful, but we're not going to let go of it. We spent too much time, energy, and focus on it. And it could be a $20 billion market, and they're just not everywhere.
Right.
It might get mentioned in the special session, diet session.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. We are on Georgia. We've been on the ground there a while. Mm-hmm. We've been at its grassroots. It may take a year or two, just because nothing happens fast in Georgia. But again, it's one of the, if you do centric circles around where is in gaming and that's meaningful.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the other than Dallas, Texas.
Right.
It's the best place left in America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we're excited by that. We're going to be patient about that, and we're going to continue to hopefully try to progress it. Time will tell. We're watching North Jersey because we have to, because of our Borgata interests, because someone's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen how the legislation's panned out.
Right.
It's waiting for us if we want something. We're trying to determine if, where. We need the legislation to come through. We need to understand the tax basis. But I was there yesterday, by way of example, trying to figure it out.
So would you do that with Boyd, or would that be?
Don't know yet.
Yeah,
we're just trying to figure.
Sure,
just trying to figure it all out. So that's out there and interesting and active, and then everything else kind of we continue to watch Indian gaming in Michigan. It keeps popping up everywhere, and some other places, but of note there. And then Florida, some tribes keep trying to do some interesting things in Pensacola and some other places, but. I don't think anything's substance going to really happen there.
Great. Well, Bill, thanks for the time. It's good to catch up. You do have a lot on your plate, and we got to do this more frequently so that we can keep on track here.
I'm here.
Great. Thanks for the time. Enjoyed this edition of the GGB podcast sponsored by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing partner for online and land-based casinos. If you want to hear more about the topics discussed today, visit GGBMagazine.com for all the news and trends in the casino industry. For weekly updates, subscribe to GGB News, which delivers all the news of the gaming industry to your desktop, waiting for you every Monday morning. Please join us next week for another edition of the GGB podcast. And don't forget to follow GGB on Twitter at Global Gaming Biz, on Facebook and LinkedIn at Global Gaming Business Magazine. Have a great week.